All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. Your home speaker and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. MJ is out. The O-Dog is off. Dave Poulin stepping in for the next 2 days.
And Pooley, look at that. He handsome is a gentleman. Wow, look at him.
You know what? They called for a line change, and I jumped in for O, and I'm not sure he's coming back at this shift. He'll be back for his next shift if it's a power play, but he's not going to kill a penalty, and he's not playing late in a game if his team is up a couple. I don't know.
Yeah. But, no, I don't think
you
so.
You know what? I mean, do you think O played near the end of the game? I would argue that he did if he had two goals. I think the coach would throw him out there at empty net situation.
Or if they were down a couple. If they were down a couple.
There is video evidence when during that 0-2 run, when the Leafs were playing Carolina.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which game it was. I want to say it was game. Actually, you know what? I think it was game 3 when he scored the OT winner. He is on the ice because the Leafs score, Sundin scores with like 25 seconds left, and O is out there. And at one point, he's chasing a guy up the boards, and he's laying on the ice, and he's completely out of sorts. But he is on the ice. Paul Maurice, either they got – now, this was back when even if you ice the puck, you could make a change. So he didn't get caught out there after an icing. Maybe he got caught out there on a long shift. I guess that's potentially what happened. Or someone, you know, broke a stick and couldn't find one, so he had to jump on.
And he was ready.
Maybe take his spot. Yeah. He was ready. But O is out there. You can find the video on YouTube when Sundin scores with like 30 seconds left in game 3, and O is on the ice. And they were up, I think, 1-0 or 2-1.
Yeah. So what's the listing? Is it O playing defense? Is that how it's listed on YouTube? Or
I don't know how it's titled.
Probably
but...
Sundin game tire. Like, the other thing is, too, is maybe we could – dub that like the shift, right? Like there's, you know, Sundin's had several shifts in his career where you're like, man, that was ridiculous, that play. Aginla, I don't know if you guys remember in the playoffs, Aginla had like that shift where he was fighting people off of his back and they end up tying the game or getting the game winner. I can't remember, but it was like a minute and 20 seconds. Maybe this is O's shift where it's like he's chasing up the wall, he falls down, loses stick, whatever, but he ends up winning it in overtime, so he gets the last laugh on everyone.
Oh, yeah. No one. And Paul Maurice doesn't have to explain anything after the game. Why is 92 on the ice with 30 seconds left in a one-goal game? Because he ended up scoring the game winner.
Yeah.
If you made a shift about O and it was about defense, he'd be furious. Like, he wouldn't even accept it.
No,
he would not want a shift with his name on it about playing defense. Just doesn't fit.
What would you not want a shift of you out there? Like, us talking about it. Like, you were really
fighting.
There's your answer.
I don't want you to see video of me fighting.
Ron Duguay.
I wasn't very good.
How many of those line brawl dust-ups were you out there for hanging on for dear life?
Yeah, you know what? The problem was when we had those dust-ups, there were five guys on the other team looking for me.
That's the thing. You played on such a tough
team. That was the easy way out.
Well,
you had the whole bench yelling, "Don't touch him."
Pooley, you were on the team, right? In the cup final. Was it cup final against Montreal or conference final when there was the brawl before?
Conference final, yeah.
Conference final, right? When Corson or Lemieux, whoever it was, scored on your net, the Flyers' empty net. And some lunatic on your team just skated after them, started chasing them all over the ice. And then it was, wasn't it like a 40-minute brawl, basically? And you and Bob Gainey were trying to figure things out? Like, what happened there?
It was so ridiculous, Brian. So it started a few games before. Corson and Lemieux were 21 and 20 years old. But they still had Gainey and they still had Robinson. You know, Carboneau was there. And so you had some veterans. And they were staying out in the ice after the other team left the warm-up and shooting pucks in the net. And the crowd would go crazy. They'd score goals in the other team's net. So a couple games before, when you say a couple of lunatics came off our bench, one of the lunatics happened to be Chico Resch, who is the calmest, quietest, gentlest 39-year-old in the history of the game. And the other one, of course, was Eddie Boxcar Hospitor.
Yeah.
So in this sequence, earlier in the series, they simply turned the net around, pushed up against the boards, and the guys couldn't do that. So now it's game 6. We're in Montreal. We're up 3-2. And we're all off the ice. And Corson and Lemieux go off, hide behind the curtain. And when Hospitor and Chico go off, they come back out. So the crowd is roaring. And, you know, And Chico, of all things, Eddie's going after Lemieux like he's fighting him. Chico helicopters his stick across the ice like he's going after Corson. I'm like, you're Chico Rush. Oh, and so we have no idea any of this is going on. And the trainer comes flying in and says, there's a brawl. There's a brawl. Well, I have my skates off. I have three broken ribs that I just had frozen. You know, I'm all geared down. Guys are scrambling to get their stuff back together. And Mark Howe, he of WHA fame, he doesn't put a shirt on so nobody can grab anything. He just puts his suspenders on, puts his elbow pads on, and grabs a stick. He said, this is the way. Elbow pads and a stick. This is the way you go into a brawl, the WHA
like
said.
Yeah, I like that.
But it was 40 minutes. It was scary. You know, I'll tell you, Dave Brown fought Chris Nyland, I believe, three different times at like $1.50, $2 ago. It was crazy.
Because the refs weren't out there, right? There were no refs. There was no...
No refs.
No security. No, nothing.
And you were trying to be a peacemaker, but there was too many guys. There was just too many guys involved. You know, you had some voices of reason out there. One of our voices of reason, Doug Crossman, had his shower sandals on.
So he's walking on the ice in sandals. He didn't put his
shower
skates
sandals.
Back on.
Didn't put it. And that would have been a big effort for Cross to put his skates back on.
Exactly.
He was a pretty mellow dude. He wasn't going to the effort to put his skates back on.
Well, what I love about that is that you guys were up 3-2 in the conference final, and you still care about a puck going in the net and warm up. Like that,
great, isn't it?
That is great. That is intensity. That is attention to detail. Like I would think personally, you'd be like, "Who cares? Let Corson and Lemieux do whatever they want. We're going to a cup final tonight, boys. Like let's get back into the room. Let's just decompose.
Well,
instead, let's have a 40-minute brawl." Yeah, no,
we did but in the way that we chose to do it, which was to have a 40-minute brawl. One of the funniest sequences: I get back in the locker room and I had to go talk to the referees. I think it was Gainey would have been the captain. So Gainey and I are in talking to the referees and trying to sort this mess out. And back then you dressed 23 or 24 guys in the warm-up. So Hospital was dressed, but he wasn't playing. He hadn't played in that series, I don't think. So I go in, he's shaving, he's all cleaned up, he's combed his hair really nice like Eddie Haskell, and he looks over me and goes, Pooley, you don't think I'm in the lineup tonight, do you? I said, you were in the lineup before the brawl. You're certainly not in it now.
Right. Yeah. I don't think the league is allowing you to be in the lineup tonight.
That's awesome.
So who won the game? Like, did you guys win the game?
We won the game. Yeah, we went down. They were a really good team, and we went down 3-1. I actually scored a shorty in the first period, and then we were down 3-1. We came back and won the game 4-3 and then went on to the finals.
Wow. Can you imagine that, Noodles? Like, imagine being game six at the Forum with a chance to go to the Cup, and you're like, oh, let's mix in a 40-minute brawl before the game starts just to make sure we've got, you know, our heads on straight.
I can't imagine how emotionally drained you would be. I mean, when you won and you get on the plane, I don't know, were you guys chartering back then, or was it commercial the next day?
Yeah, we were sort of ahead of it in Philly in terms of all that stuff. We were chartered before other teams were.
So you get on the charter after the plane. You're having a cold beer. You're excited that you've moved on. But I would imagine there were some guys that slept well later that night. Like, you imagine how emotionally and physically drained you would be after, you know, fighting for 40 minutes, like hanging on. And then playing a full game and then ending the series. To me, it would be an amazing feeling sitting on that plane, because I guarantee you probably a lot of the guys on your team, Pooley, probably won some of the fights, because you guys were a pretty tough team.
Yeah, we had some guys in that team. I'd say Daryl Stanley was involved. Dave Brown was certainly involved. You know, Hospital was involved. But we had guys like Donnie Knockbauer. And he was a tough, tough kid. I don't know if you remember Snap.
No, I remember.
That's a tough guy. You know, and Tockett's involved. But we had a lot of guys that could handle themselves, actually. But it was, you know, and even a big guy like Brad Marsh and Shel Samuelson, they were all involved. It was scary. I mean, you know, 23, 24 guys from each team and piles of guys and pulling guys off. And, you know, I'm out there and I grabbed my sweater, and I grabbed my flak jacket. I had a fancy new flak jacket, threw that on just thinking, you know, somebody takes a shot at my ribs. I certainly don't need that right now. But it was bizarre.
Is there another guy in league history who has caused more of a problem than Claude Lemieux?
I don't. Like, I mean, maybe modern-day Brad Marchand.
Yeah, but not to this extent. Think about that. Claude Lemieux caused a 40-minute brawl before Game 6 because he had to go out there and be a hero.
As a 20-year-old.
As a 20-year-old. Yeah. And then we all know the Draper situation where he lays him out, and that leads to just brawl after brawl after brawl. He's been in the middle. When he was in Jersey, he used to cause problems.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he'd be right up there.
Would Dale
he'd
Hunter be right there, too?
Like, Hunter would be the other guy for me.
Hunt probably would. Hunt's had some big-time ones, the Turgeon one, certainly. But Hunt was involved when he was back in Quebec, too. Don't forget. You might go back to that Quebec-Montreal brawl, that legendary... He might have been involved in that one.
Well, I'm sure he was. If he was there, he was.
Oh, you know,
he was. I think it goes without. If he was in the province.
Doesn't matter whether he was there.
He was a part of it. Hunter, right. Hunter and Lemieux, probably. But Lemieux, for me, sticks out even more. So I don't know why, because Hunter was just ridiculous, too. But Lemieux. I always felt like Hunter, like Lemieux was tough too. Lemieux could fight, and he would fight sometimes. I know.
Was Hunt though. Hunt's
But that's what I'm saying is Hunter to me had more of a reputation as being a tough guy. Like you feared him. Lemieux, it was like, I want to kill him. But I think a lot of guys were like, I'd rather not knock on Dale Hunter's door. Like, I'll let that go. But Lemieux, it was like,
well, the problem was, when you knocked on Hunter's door, even if you just like rapped lightly, and you thought, you know, you were just going to like a really light tap, and he was opening that door, and he was coming, and he was getting you.
Right.
You know, I had some real battles with him. I actually ended up fighting him one time, which wasn't a smart move at all.
Really? Yeah.
Not a smart move at all.
Just like the epitome of 40-30, like low center of gravity, grit grinder. Yeah.
Washington had two of them. Remember Randy Burridge? Burridge was that low center of gravity, kind of thick guys. And I can't remember what.
Okay, let me throw a third name in there for a low center gravity guy.
Okay.
Killer Kaminsky.
Kevin Kaminsky.
We had him with Randy Burridge. With Randy Burridge and Dale Hunter. Killer Kaminsky.
Yeah.
Like, check that out. You. He and his 500 minutes in penalties.
Yeah, when you have a nickname like Killer, like that's different. Like Doug Gilmore is called Killer, right?
Yeah, but I don't know the genesis of that.
Right.
Like why? Like I know why Kaminsky is called Killer. Like that one is pretty obvious. You can figure that out.
He enjoys it. He enjoyed it.
Right.
Yeah. But if you know the whole story about Kevin, and I think Kevin was named Coach of the Year in one of the Western, maybe the Tier 2 Western League this year, and. One of my favorite teammates. I played with him for a short time in Washington, but he was 175 pounds and not in shape at all. And he liked to gear down during the fight. So he went right down to, you know, to
no tarp, nothing.
To topless. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No tarp, nothing. And that's the way. And he threw gear everywhere. And the first time you hear about the reputation, they're like, we're calling the guy up, Kevin Kaminsky. I'm like, tell me about him. Well, his nickname's Killer and he's this and he's that. So, you know, you start checking into it and you're looking at penalty minutes and are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And
that's the greatest.
And then he walks in and you're looking at him, you're like, he's like 5'10", 175. Are we get the right guy here? Did they call up the right guy? And then the show starts and you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's sitting beside you on the bench chirping and somebody looks over and you're just pointing at him going, it was him.
But he's cut from that Kelly Chase and Wendell Clark mold. He's from right there. All of those guys, Saskatchewan lunatics.
I think he's a Kelvington boy, actually.
Yeah,
he might be a Kelvington boy.
Oh, they're all within, basically, if you're within an hour of each other, you're neighbors in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of within the same range. Because Chaser was tweeting about that earlier in the week, or someone posted a video of Wendell when he was 18, and he was like 10 games into his career, 18 years old.
It was, and he was fighting Ben Wilson.
Was that it?
B-E-H-N.
Just a grizzled vet. Ben,
who I played with in Philly, he had the eyes that went up into the head and spun. Like that was a scary, scary toughness, but he was a big guy. And, you know, here's Wendell fighting him, and it's like, holy smokes.
Same thing, like Wendell's what is Wendell, 5'11", 170 when he showed up, probably 180.
Maybe 180, and that farmer.
No numbers associated with that toughness, holy smokes.
No, exactly. Looking at the weight card, it doesn't matter, man, because he's coming out and he's throwing. And they were 18, just throwing bombs down at the Garden, like, and just people going crazy.
What a way to endear yourself to the crowd early on, right? Like, you know, to make yourself loved. Like, you know, you play that way, you run around, you hit, you can fight, you can score. Like, he was a mixture of everything, Wendell. Like, you know, you wonder why he's so loved here in Toronto.
Well, that is a big gripe for Leaf fans forever, because he did not win the Rookie of the Year his year. And there are two awards that Leaf fans freak about. It's that Gilmore didn't win the Hart in 92-93. And I think they gave it to – not gave it. Lemieux won it that year, and that was one of the years where he had like 160 points in like 55 games or something.
Yeah.
But Gilmore was so good that year. And then, you know, just talking to my dad and older Leaf fans, they're like, Wendell should have been the Rookie of the Year when he came.
Who won it that year?
I want to say it was
86.
Like –
86.
It was – yeah, it was 85 he got drafted. So 85, 86. I want to say like Kirk Muller, but he would have been – older than that. I don't remember.
He was Lemieux's age.
Yeah, I don't remember who. We can look that up. Grappler, look it up.
Might have been one of the Turgeon boys.
Yeah, and I'm sure whoever won it had a very good year, clearly. But it was like Wendell showed up, and he scored, I think he had 34 goals as a rookie, which is, remember, because Matthews just passed him. Remember when that was a big goal, when he scored his 35th?
Yeah, yeah.
It was the most in Leaf history as a rookie. So Wendell had, I think, 34 as a rookie, and you know, 55, 60 points, had like 20 fights, you know, and was throwing it just hits everywhere. I think they made the playoffs his rookie year, and he didn't win Rookie of the Year. And people in Toronto were like, that doesn't make sense. But
yeah,
well you know, with Dougie Brian, that year I was up for the Selke. I was one of the three finalists for the Selke in 92-93.
Yeah.
And that's the year that Dougie won the Selke. And, you know, when you get seated in those award shows, they're live shows. And so when you get an end seat and you're a finalist, you're like, there's a pretty good chance you're going to win here, you know, because they want you on the end so you can get up real easily. And the Hart was given out first. And when Dougie didn't win the Hart, whoever was behind me leaned over and said, Pooley, you ain't winning the Selke because he's going home with something tonight.
He's getting something. Yeah, that's right. Oh, you know who won it in 85, 86? It was Gary Suter.
Yeah.
In Calgary.
Texts and tweets. Mario sent that. Yeah.
Gary Suter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, which is a good player. You're right.
Of course he was. Yeah. But he was 21. He was an older player, I guess, as a rookie, relatively speaking. Yeah, and I bet you he had a monster year, clearly, in Calgary, if you win Rookie of the Year, especially as a defenseman.
Yeah, but, probably like he's probably one of those guys who's legitimately like a point a game or something like that. Like just, you know, and Suter was that type of player. But, yeah, it's funny to go down memory lane because, Pooley, you were just, I mean, you're ahead of me. I don't know, let's say 5-6 years, but I played, there was some crossover, especially with some of the guys that we played against. And I think back, like Dale Hunter was a guy that you had to be aware when he was on the ice. You knew where he was because, you know, he would hit you, he would stick you, he was tough as nails. Claude Lemieux too. Like Claude Lemieux had skill. Like he, as a goaltender, I remember doing my pre-scout on him because he was, you know, a right-handed shot that liked to play his off wing, and he always wanted the one-timer. But I knew one night he had a two-on-one on me, and I remember thinking, like, there's no way in hell this guy's passing. Like, he's a shooter. He's a flat-out shooter. And I think he, you know, he missed the net or went short side on me or something like that. But, you know, I remember thinking a guy like Claude Lemieux is so skilled but so tough and so – you know, you had to be aware around the net because he was chippy. And then after a whistle, he's right in there and he's sticking his mug in there and people are punching away and he's punching back. Like he was very tough to play against. And that's why, I mean, he was a beast in the playoffs.
Oh, like, man, I was about to say him and Hunter, huge playoff performers. Yeah. Like I'll bet you they had like at least a half a point more per game in the playoffs or close to it than they did during the regular season careers. They were monsters, the two of them.
Hunt's had a game 7 overtime winner against us when he was in Washington, a series winner. But I just sent Andy Moga a great picture, and Hunter was just set to run over him, Jamie. You can see the two framed in the picture, and Andy's making a save. And you can just see Hunter, and it's got he's almost apologized already, like, oh, I'm sorry. Did I really do that? Did I really just smoke you? Yeah. And I sent it to Andy and said, keep your head up. He's coming.
Yeah. It's not that picture doesn't say 1,000 words. It says one. I'm like, run.
Yeah, exactly.
Run. Enes Kanter is going to join us from the Boston Celtics. And he was a New York Knicks for a while. We'll ask him about James Dolan and how he thinks the Celtics are going to match up. Is he a Disneyland guy? Like, the NBA is going to Disney.
Yeah.
I hope he is. I hope they all are. So we're going to catch up with him. Ray's coming up. Ray Ferraro just after 5. Dave pulling in here for the next couple of days. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050N on TSN 4. All right, Enes Kanter calling in here in just a moment from the Boston Celtics. And he's played in a lot of different spots throughout the NBA. And I'm sure he's never played in a hub city, which will be happening come this summer because the NBA is expected to set up at Disney down in Orlando and wrap up their season. And Boston will be one of those teams, whether it's 16, 20, 24, all 30. Boston's locked in, and they're a good team. And we'll see what Enes has to say about that. And I guess he's a big wrestling guy. Like, there's a lot of athletes that want to get into the WWE. And I guess it's lucrative. Like, you can make money. You can build your brand.
Right.
But just after we announced that he was coming on, we've had multiple people write in, so you got to ask him about the WWE. Like, it's so important. So I guess we will. Got to get to the bottom of that. He must be a big wrestling guy.
Yeah, he may have like a signature move that he's working on too.
Well, now's the time to master that, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you find
he's working on his signature move right now.
Yeah, forget your you know, free throws. Your three-point game, you know, we need a signature move for when you step into the ring at WrestleMania.
It's a slam dunk.
That's what it should. I don't know how it's tough to come up with a unique finishing move now in wrestling,
that's
man. It's
true.
Been around so long, right? Yeah. Everyone's kind of mastered it. Well, let's try and find the answer if we can. You know him from the Boston Celtics, a longtime member in the NBA, making his debut here on the show. This is great. Here's Enes Kanter. Enes, how you doing, buddy?
What's up, guys? How y'all doing?
We're doing well. Okay. We're just saying that ever since we announced just on Twitter that you're coming on, no one's saying, hey, ask him about the Celtics. Ask him about the Hub City. Ask him about the NBA and what's going to happen here. Everyone wants us to ask you about the WWE.
Oh, my God.
What's up with this? Like, what are you working on your finishing move? Are you going to be like a superstar on the WWE or what?
I actually am, man. Forget about like the free throws and stuff. I am actually working on my finishing move.
All right, what's it going to look like? Give us a scoop here.
I was actually still trying to come up with a name, and I actually like asked one of my friends. He's like, "Hey, you're from Turkey, so I think Turkish July will be the best name." You know,
I love that.
But hey, it's fun, man. I'm excited about that for sure.
Yeah, what is it about all these athletes like Gronk, Rodman back in the day? There's been a lot of them. Like, why? I guess you're a wrestling fan, but why do you have such a connection and want to get into the wrestling game at some point?
Well, I went to college here, Kentucky, and NCAA did not let me play. I mean, obviously, crazy rules. But that was one of my hobbies, actually, just watching WWE. I actually went to my first match in Indiana that year. Like 9 years ago, and then I'm like, you know what? This can be my career, and actually we'll start watching that since, and then I'm still watching it. Actually, I met one of my favorite, actually my favorite of all time, wrestler Undertaker when they came to Madison Square Garden. Like, my knees were shaking first time I met him. Like, it was crazy, and I'm like, you know what? This can be my career, and I actually talked to Paul Heyman, and he's like, hey. Are we doing this or what? I'm like, dude, you got to give me at least like 4 or 5 more years to just play in NBA, and then I am all yours.
Wow. All right. Well, we need you against the Taker at like WrestleMania. That would be – would that be your amazing, dream, right? Come true?
Oh, you have no idea.
Okay. All right. That has to happen then. I hope Vince McMahon needs to be listening, because it sounds like the Undertaker – like, he's obviously at the end of the road, but he's got a book coming out, I think, and a big documentary.
Right. I'm excited about that. Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be cool, but it sounds like it might be the end of the road. Maybe you can just kind of – he can pass you the baton. The Undertaker steps aside, and Enes Kanter steps in and just runs things for 30 years.
Hey,
how's that sound?
I love it, man. It's going to be exciting for sure.
Okay. Well, what about this Hub City situation? Like, it sounds like the NBA, you guys are going to be setting up down in Orlando. Are you a Disney guy? Like, how How exciting is this? How is there any anxiety? What do you think about this idea?
I mean, I prefer Vegas, obviously, but right now I'll take even Memphis. I'll take anything right now. I'll take anything right now. But I think, you know, like they were talking about either like one or two locations. When we had a conversation with Adam Silver, that possibly they'll look into Orlando. But I heard that there's so many cities that are calling the NBA and want to host the NBA players. That Adam even said, like, they were thinking about even outside of the country, but then they came back and said, hey, it will be tough to just move the whole league to a different country. So right now they are looking for Orlando right now. I think they're going to put us in a bubble in like 1 or 2 months and see, and then we're going to, I think, play.
How have you been staying in shape? I mean, obviously, have you treated this like the off season, allowed your body and your mind to relax and then kind of ramp things up? Have you had a home gym? Are there guys that are improvising to stay in shape?
Hey, I'll be honest with you, man. I've gained 7 to 8 pounds already. You know, there's no lie. I'm going to keep it honest with you. But the good thing was Ramadan. So, like, I did not gain that much weight. I was expecting it was even worse. But actually, we had this, you know, virtual workouts with Celtics still. So we had, you know, like the 5 or 6 of us get on this call, FaceTime, and literally just the coaches are telling us what to do. Like, you know, push-ups, sit-ups, slides, this and that. You know, some players are lucky have to have, like, big spaces in their houses, but, like, some players live in, like, in a small apartment. So I see this player literally just doing, you know, curls with suitcase full of clothes. I'm like, this is a championship mentality. This is going to bring us a championship, you know? I was like,
that's commitment. Mean,
exactly, man. Like, I mean, we are all trying to do our like best we can to stay in shape. But like, if a player came out and say, I'm in a game shape, he is lying. Because there's no way that you can, in quarantine life, you can stay in a game shape, you know, because you have to play the game to be in a game shape. So like right now, man, all I'm trying to do is just to not gain weight.
And as they haven't decided on exact format yet, but in sort of a weird little twist, if they played 1 versus 8 in the East, or if they played 1 versus 16, both ways Philly. You'd end up against Philly.
Yep. And I already looked at it, man.
Would you rather play against a team you don't like? Like, you're jumping right back into it. Would you rather play against a team you know and you don't like? Or would you rather play against a Western team that maybe you've only seen once or twice and you don't know them as well?
I would probably say this, man. Besides Houston Rockets, that I hate they go on a small ball. I would literally play any team in East or West right now. But I think I prefer East because, like, I know the teams already. You know, we play against them so many times. And, like, our game plan is ready. So I would prefer play against the East teams, you know. Because, like, West is, like, it's crazy, man. You never know what's going to happen with the Western teams. But I heard that the other thing they're talking about is, like, the World Cup. I don't know how much you are a fan of soccer, but they were talking about, like, 20 teams. Because, like, we have, like, 8-9 games left in the regular season. So they want to give a chance to some of the teams out there that were about to make the playoffs. So they're talking about 20 teams, 5 different groups, 4 teams in each. And we're just going to do like a little tournament. So I have no idea. There's so many rumors and talks out there. The only thing I'm trying to do, man, is just wait and see what happens.
With Enes Kanter of the Boston Celtics. So you took a little jab at Houston there. You hate on the small ball. Why do you hate on that so much?
It's like the small ball. I never liked the small ball, man, because obviously I'm a big man. So like I got to go against someone to just, you know, play post-ups, go into rebounds. I got to box them out. But like these dudes are like all picking pops and can shoot and go right by you, you know. So that's why like I don't like Houston Rockets game, man. It's good because they're tough to guard.
Yeah, but especially with extra weight, man, that's going to – you really got to be concerned about that.
Exactly.
Right? You're chasing around Russell Westbrook, who's probably shredded still right now.
Exactly.
That's a different story. What we all know, again, you mentioned it. I mean, there's a lot of rumors about what it's going to look like and where you're going to play. The one thing that's been consistent is there won't be fans. And everyone keeps talking about how much that's going to suck and how you want the fans. But let's spin it the other way. How might it be maybe better without fans? Is there anything you can think of where you're like, actually, that's not bad. I can deal with that without fans.
I mean, are you? I don't know if you're a wrestling fan or not, but I watched WrestleMania, and they did it without the fans. It was one of the most awkward and weirdest, like, matches, because you could hear, like, the wrestlers were talking. You could hear everything, you know? But, like, I'm thinking about on a basketball court, it would be just weird. The only thing, like, the ball bouncing and the shoes kicking, and that's all you got to hear. But, I mean, if you ask any players right now, man, like, we are all itching to go out there and play basketball if it's all safe to go. So we'll take anything right now.
Are you a trash talker on the court? I mean, there's some players that, like to chirp and have some fun and get in the face of other guys. Do you like to trash talk out there?
Yes. I don't cuss, but I do trash talk a lot. If they mic me up, obviously I can't talk. I can't trash talk. But like, if I'm not mic'd up, I do trash talk a lot. Yes.
So what's your go-to, you know, smack talk? Is it a block at the rim? Like, would that be – that would lead – what would lead you to feel the most confident, man, in your chirp? Like, what play on the court?
If I dunk on somebody, for sure I'm turning his face and, you know, because, like, it's firing everybody up. I know they're going to give me a technical foul, but I'm still going to turn that face and try to trash talk to them. But either dunking on somebody or definitely just blocking somebody.
What about when you get dunked on, though? It happens to everyone.
Oh, Lord.
And you know it's going viral. Like, you know it. You know it's on SportsCenter. It's all over Instagram, Twitter. Like, what's that like when 20,000 people are like, ooh, that's our guy, but he just got dunked on badly?
If it's, like, front of our fans, it's not that bad. I'm like, at least the crowd is not into it. But if it's, like, on the road, you get dunked on and you fell on the ground, it's an N1. I'm like, God, please just get me out of here.
Yeah, that's not good for anyone. But the thing is, I think what gets lost in that, Ennis, is like, I give you credit for going up, right? Like, you're trying to make a play.
Exactly. I mean, especially like, I mean, if it's LeBron is going up, I'm getting out of the way. I'm not going to go up with LeBron. Or right. Like Giannis, I'm going to get out of the way. But like, if it's like some point guard or like a shooting guard, I'm going up with him.
Yeah, and you'll take him down if you have to. That's got to be the play. Well, we wish you nothing but success, and you know, stay safe. And we look forward to seeing you back in the court down in Orlando. When that happens, we don't know. But best of luck until you run into the Raptors. Then things are going to change up here in Toronto. You know that.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens.
All right, man. Good luck with everything. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ennis.
There he is, Ennis Kanter from the Boston Celtics.
I love him.
What like, a beauty.
What a great interview.
That's a big personality.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's like, I'm not going to lie to you, I put on weight. Like, everyone's put on weight. Everyone has put on weight.
You know what he is? He's one of those guys you know is fun-loving, and guys love him in the room, but I guarantee, like, his strength and conditioning coach is like, please, I don't need that quote out there right now on social media, where he's just like, yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. He's like, yeah, I put on 7 or 8 pounds, and anybody who says they're in good shape, they're lying about it. Like, I thought it was brilliant. He was awesome.
He's so good.
Well, the point about game shape, though, is so true. You know, you can do whatever you want to do away from the ice, away from the court, away from the field.
Yeah.
Until you're playing in a game and it's a real game, not an exhibition game, not a ramp up, not an inner squad game, you can't be in game shape. It's physically impossible. Maybe it's just the little jostles, the little bumps you get along the way. You know, every time you take a stride, you get knocked off that stride. All those little things can only happen by playing a game.
How about a playoff game?
You're
How about
right,
that? Like, forget just the game.
That's the crazy part, like, Pooley, like, you know, explain, like, it's different for a goaltender, like, my timing, you know, feeling the puck. I think the biggest transition from practice to even into inner squad game is traffic in front, tips and screens and all of that. For you, like you just mentioned, it's more like, yeah, you can skate, you can handle the puck, but it's now there's a guy that's going to hit you, rub you out, those physical battles that wear you down in the corners, like, that stuff, you don't do a lot of that in practice. You know, you work on systems and you work on skating and shooting and skill development. Like, that'll be a tough, I guess, adjustment for players to go, okay, we're going to ramp up in 3 weeks, and then we're going to play 2 exhibition games, and then we're in the playoffs here. Like that, you know, to me, there's going to be some real sloppy hockey early on, and the quicker you can get that adjustment in your game, I think that'll bode for you to get to that next level here in the playoffs.
And who's it, you know, it's so hard to figure out who the advantage favors, the young guy, older guy, intermediate guy, you know, when you at your prime, sometime, right. I don't know, 20, 27 to 31. I'd take that guy, the 26 to 31 guy, who's still got the really good legs, but also has the experience. A Marchand would be, you know, because every time you would take a step, he'd just knock you off balance. Dale Hunter would do that. Just knock you off balance, get in your way, make it hard for you. And I'll tell you one thing that really surprised me, Jamie, when we read that 22 or 24 page, whatever format you got it on,
22,
right?
22, yeah.
That there would be six players on the ice to start with and not a coach of any sort involved.
Right.
And that, to me, simply doesn't make sense. And, you know, you can go out by your own. Maybe for the first day or two, you can go out by yourself with six guys and, you know, somebody's got to figure it out. There's got to be a leader out there and diagram what you're going to do in your respective areas. But how did that come about? Like who it's someone on the PA side and who said, okay, we'll go back in groups of six, but we don't want any coaches involved.
That feels to me like the summer skates though, right? Like everyone's in town by September, whatever, and they're skating, but the coaches aren't allowed out there because the players are like, listen, I'm not working right now. Like I'm working out, but if you're here, I'm working. Like that's what it feels like to me.
These ones, you're going to have to be working at some point. And it just seems to me someone who's, you know, bitter about a coach he had at one point that made him skate too early in camp. And this is so different. You need some structure out there. You need somebody to say, okay, here's exactly what you can do for what we were just talking about. Here's how you can simulate that, you know, without somebody beside you, maybe bump into a, you know, a tackling dummy and then take a couple of quick strides, whatever it may be. But to me, I can see where there would be guys that would want to overcoach, but I think you do need some structure, even right from the start, if you want to ramp up.
Well,
would you be able to do this if you're, let's say you're Morgan Riley and John Tavares, and they're going to be in separate, you know, to start off with separate six-man groups. Could they have a conversation with Sheldon Keefe and go, you know, what do we want to – I would argue that they probably have in their mind or something laid out to go, can you try and get to this? We're going to have some progression that when we are full board and when the coaches are here, we're going to start with this. You know, in the first 4 or 5 days, can you get to this? Like, can – you know, run some drills. Like, to me, will there be some form of, like, communication –
Yeah, there will be. You guys know they're going to talk before they get on the ice, and they're going to have a plan. Or if it's even the strength coach, if it's Keith, someone is going to say, okay, first few days, get your feet wet, and then let's start working on this. Let's start working on that. All right, let's come back and get to our list in terms of, you know, who has the right to be most rattled or most upset with the 2014 playoff that was officially announced a few days ago. We'll get to that. We'll go around the table next. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up in about 15 minutes. Some news out there. The NHL has told the players that they will not start training camp before July 10th. So July 10th at the earliest is when training camps will start. So basically what that confirms is August is when they're going to be playing. So basically gear up for that. They're going to play in August, play through September. October will be free agency in the draft. They'll shut down in November, and then they're gear back up in December and play either in December or maybe even early January.
Yeah, I would argue it's probably going to be January to start that new season. But I like this. This is the first time we've actually heard a date, right? Have we heard any type of hard date? This is the first date I've actually heard.
But it's still not a date of when it starts. It's just a date of when it won't start. But still, you're right. I mean, it gives us something. But I'm waiting for when are we playing? Like, when is the game going to happen? That's what I would like to hear, but they don't have that
answer.
A lot
of money, it wouldn't be before August 1st. Saturday, August 1st is probably – wouldn't that be a great target date, Saturday, August 1st?
That's what it seems like.
I think
like.
What will happen, they're going to get back and get going here. This is a long stretch of time, though, to skate. I mean, this is – you're talking about early June for the small group stuff. Man, by the time July 10th rolls around, they're going to be absolutely. I mean, they're going to be sick of each other.
Yeah,
they get going.
Anyway, let's get to this year. We'll pick back up on that in the next hour. The 2014 playoff thing is set. All right, so there's a lot of teams that I think are happy that it went to 12 teams in each conference. Clearly, Montreal, Chicago would be included in that. Arizona, maybe the Leafs, because it's like we don't have to worry about it. We're in. But who has the right to be the most upset, most rattled with the fact that the regular season is officially over and it's a 24-team playoff format? 1 through 3. Doesn't even have to be in any particular order.
Right.
But who wants to start this party off?
Pooley, do you want to go or do you want me to go?
Go ahead, Jamie. I'll jump
go ahead.
In
okay.
I'm gonna start off with the Boston Bruins. And Hayes, you've made a case for this the last 3 or 4 days.
Like, yep.
The Bruins were rolling. They're gonna win the President's Trophy, and now all of a sudden you're like in a chance to be reseeded. Like, you know, you should have had home ice right through the playoffs. Yeah, you get a bye, but if it doesn't go well in that bye, all of a sudden your matchup changes. So I think the Bruins should be pissed. Tampa's another team that I think was really rolling, and they're looking, and I know they were pissed at the format. They may be looking at their matchup and saying, I don't like it, and if it was only 16 teams, we'd be looking at something different. And the other one, I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I'm looking at Calgary. Like, that Calgary-Winnipeg, one of those teams is going home, and to me, both of those teams are really strong teams. And when you look at all the matchups, like in the play-in, I think Calgary-Winnipeg is one of the toughest. Like, that's legitimately a coin flip.
Okay, I like it. One through three. Pooley, what
yeah,
you
that
got?
That was one I clearly looked at, was the Winnipeg one, but I went along the similar lines for my number one, Carolina. And, you know, they draw the New York Rangers, who they were 0-4 against this year, but then they say they don't like it. Like,
right.
Don't say you don't like it. Why would you say you don't want to play the Rangers? I mean, don't tell everybody you don't like it. I mean,
right.
That to me made no sense at all. They didn't have a real legitimate reason for voting against it other than they didn't like their matchup. And by the way, I don't like their matchup either. I mean, I don't like the thoughts of Jamie. I think goalies are going to be a huge factor. And, you know, if you look at, they got three there.
I know.
They got three. Not one, not two, not three. You can run the old guy in Lundqvist. You can run Shestorkin. You can run Grigoriev.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree.
Could be a really, really tough matchup. The second one's an individual thing, guys, and that's Alexander Ovechkin. 48 goals. And the reason I say when they went to the 24-team format is they've determined that the, you know, remaining goals, points, whatever, aren't going to count on any sort of scoreboard.
Right.
Anywhere they show up. So, you know, at the start of the year, when I was asked if he'd catch Gratz, I said, you know, there's no way, because at 34 years old, you start to drop off. You just do. And he hasn't. And now all of a sudden, he's only 188 behind. So where every goal would be a big factor, you know, he being at 48 and 188, I think, you know, has reason to say, wow, that's
he
really
needs every game. And now next year will be more condensed, and he's a year older. Absolutely. Yeah. Good one.
Right. My third one is the Leafs. I don't think this is a good matchup for the Leafs. It's an 8-9 matchup, but I'm not sure you could get a more anti-Leaf situation than Columbus. And believe me, they've got a coach that will play that to the max. I mean, they will drive that to the max. There's no question about it. And, you know, Torts did it last year with Tampa Bay, and he played – you know, every trump card he had. Then they lose all the guys. And, Jamie, I did 3 or 4 games with Columbus this year. Man, they're hard to play against. They just aren't. And sometimes you got to look at the lineup and say, who is that?
Yeah.
You know, who's Andrew Peak?
Right.
Like, Seth Jones isn't there. Who's Andrew Peak?
And,
but they just keep coming up with guys. And I think that's really, really a tough matchup for them, because they can play the market. They can play the star power. They can play every single thing. And Torts will maximize that.
Okay, that's an interesting one, because, you know, the Leafs, Dubas said yesterday they felt, based on the probability and the numbers, pretty comfortable they would be in top 16. But if they were, they'd be playing Tampa. Like, I'll take Columbus over Tampa, but the way they're structured, you make a very valid point, Pooley. And if they lose that, they'll take even more heat, because they're supposed to beat Columbus. They weren't supposed to necessarily beat Boston or Tampa or whatever.
All right,
I got creative on a few of these. Number one, the people that deserve to be most rattled with this 2014 playoff format, the haters of Stan Bowman and Mark Bergevin are number one, because Stan Bowman, the GM in Chicago, he has so much heat on him in that market. Like, people have turned on him because Quinville's gone. Because the team has fallen off the past few years, because really it doesn't look like they have much of a plan going forward. But now they're a playoff team. Playoff, play-in, whatever you want to call it, they're in. He's not going anywhere. Bergevin, the same thing in Montreal. Like, he has so much heat on him all the time about not finding a number one center, about, you know, a number of things that have happened over the course of his run in Montreal, and now they're in. Like, I don't think he was maybe going anywhere anyway, but now they're in. What if they win a couple rounds? All of a sudden, he's going to feel pretty good about his plan. So I think the people that have turned on Stan Bowman and Mark Bergevin, the GM in Chicago and Montreal, they're looking at this saying, really? Like, now, yeah, I can't yell and scream that they missed because technically they're in. Yeah. Number two, I've got Edmonton for a couple of reasons. One, they were a lock. They were getting in. And they were rolling. They felt good about their game. And now they got to play a team in Chicago who's battle-tested. But more so, they were real close to being a top-four seed. They have more points than Dallas. Just Dallas, right, had games in hand, so they squeaked past them. Edmonton should probably be thinking, forget the play-in. We should be a top-four.
Yeah,
like, you give us one more game, we should have a bye right to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that's a great
point. So I think Edmonton deserves to be really rattled with this. And number three, again, I went off the board. I'm going to go Jack Eichel because he still has not played a playoff game, and now they expand the playoff seating, and they stop right before him.
Like, they, 3 points short. Or
3 points short, and
with
they
games
had two
in
games
hand.
In hand.
Yeah,
they could have,
yeah,
they could have caught Montreal, right? Yeah. They win one more. They win the next game, and I think they would have leapfrogged them based on points percentage. Yeah. That close to Jack Eichel finally saying, I'm relevant, the team is relevant, we're in the dance. And now I guess he spoke today down in Buffalo, and he's like, I don't know what to tell you guys anymore. Like, we don't win anything. I'm sick and tired of it. He's, yeah, clearly not happy with the whole operation. And I would be pissed if I was, yeah, Eichel.
Shout out to Matthews, too. He's short 50, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would have got there. He would have been the fourth Leaf in, yeah, in history, exactly, to hit 50. Yeah. There's a lot of them that you can
no, I know. I just
point to.
And I figured I'd shout him out here.
No, for sure. Matthews, for sure. And Boston, like, I knew you were going there, so I let you have that one too, Noodles.
Yeah.
But they deserve to be rattled for sure.
But you know what? I think they're going to be fine. I think Cassidy will play that card too, and that's, yeah, a savvy crew in that locker room. They'll find a way to use that.
Yep. Okay, we'll continue with this with Ray Ferraro into the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.